Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the Scarycast Network, this is Dr. John Stamey, welcoming everyone to Pro Wrestling Interviews. It's great to have everyone here. We got a couple of great co-hosts with us, and we're going to talk about some really cool things. So first of all, I want to introduce Tony Robinson from Richmond, Virginia. How are you doing tonight, Tony?
I am doing fantastic. It was very nasty and rainy out in the RVA today. But, you know, I'm still here. The rain's not going to stop me from being here. We have a lot to talk about today, so let's get it started.
All right, well, that sounds good. And our chief commentator tonight from Richmond, Virginia as well. Boy, everyone good is from Richmond, aren't they? The one and only Stellar Steve, Steve Logan. How you doing tonight, Steve?
Feeling haunted by the entrance music earlier. The rain, it's perfect Black Sabbath weather, fitting that Ozzy Osbourne was on last night in that Survivor Series introduction. Doing great, and I'll let Tony start with the Survivor Series 2022 War Games review, because he's dying to talk about this, and it was an interesting card.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I had to talk about it, because, like, War Games is, like, my number one favorite match. Like, when you think about War Games, you think about, you know, back when they first started in WCW, and the reason why they brought back War Games was because they wanted to make a memory and, like, have it, like a tribute to Dusty, because Dusty was known for the War Games match. Even like Kevin Owens was wearing a Dusty Rhodes shirt on last night, and to see that on the main card is really absolutely amazing. And we're definitely gonna get right into it right here. So the first match was the Women's War Games match. Bianca Belair, Alexa Bliss, Asuka, Mia Yim, and Becky Lynch versus Damage Control, Nikki Cross, and Rhea Ripley. Awesome, awesome match. A lot going on, and, like, a lot of, like, weapons being thrown. Like, you had, like, the trash can lid, you got candlesticks, you got handcuffs, you have the table, and at the end, we have Becky Lynch did the leg drop through the table on Damage Control and picked up the win. And
yeah, that was a crazy leg drop from Becky on top of that cage there. And also one of my favorite moments in the match was Io Sky doing a moonsault on the top. Looked pretty crazy onto some opponents, and then loved the participants in the match with Io, Asuka, Nikki, and Rhea specifically, and some others in there. So, like you said, a lot of weapons and chaos. And we'll see if what's next for Damage Control. I know they're tag team champions still, but this is like a big win for returning Becky Lynch from injury. Sorry, next match.
Yeah, next match is AJ Styles with the OC versus Finn Balor with Judgment Day. Also a really good match. There was a point where Dominic interfered and, you know, Gallows and Anderson had to step in and help AJ. And, you know, actually, before Survivor Series, you saw on social media that Dominic and Rhea went to the Mysterio household and he attacked his father once again on Thanksgiving. That's like everything is cool and whatnot, like they're family. But you know, if you turn on your father, of course you're not going to be welcome in. Because, like, come on. Like, how are you going to turn on your father and expect that, oh, like, he's going to let you in for Thanksgiving? No, that doesn't work like that. But at the end, AJ Styles picked up the win. All right, and
yeah,
the next match. Oh, okay, go ahead.
This is a dream match. It's kind of like it's been done before when Bray Wyatt got sick and they were going to do Bray Wyatt versus Finn Balor, but I'm glad they put this on the card. It's nice seeing AJ Styles Finn Balor singles match, given their history with the Bullet Club and New Japan. But yeah, I'm not surprised AJ got the win. And with Luke and Carl at ringside, I believe. Just super cool that they rematch that again. Next match is?
Oh, the next match is Ronda Rousey with Shayna Baszler versus Shotzi for the SmackDown Women's Championship. Another really, really good match. I really thought Shotzi had a really good chance in winning the title because I would love for them to put the title on Shotzi because Shotzi is a really, really amazing competitor and she has been unstoppable in WWE, you know, whether it's like in the ring or hosting Halloween Havoc. Like, she has done so much for the company and I really, really thought that she was going to get the title win here, but I guess wasn't her time, and Ronda Rousey like put the arm bar on her, and she retained. And what do you think of the match?
There seems to be a lot of mixed and negative response to this match. I don't want to crap on what you just said, but yeah, I like Shotzi. I didn't think she had a chance of winning, but I think this was just a match for Ronda to get through to get to Royal Rumble. We'll see what Ronda has in between Survivor Series War Games and Royal Rumble. But I guess they're teasing a Charlotte return because Ronda's trash talking said she's the queen. So maybe they'll play into a Charlotte match. I'm glad she actually got this match. It's a big match, title match on pay-per-view with Ronda. It's a big deal. So I thought it was funny that they went into the crowd and, like, it seemed like it was obvious plants there. Like, there was a few rows right behind the rail, and, like, Shotzi and Ronda were, like, Shotzi dived into the rows, and the rows fell back. It was kind of, like, cool and funny at the same time that they did like a crowd dive, literally, because like she's got the whole rocker persona. So glad she got the match. It seemed like a lot of people were kind of mixed about it, but about the performance. Also, one thing to notice I know this, he's kind of been controversial in the past, but Brian Kendrick helped produce that match, so I thought it was interesting that before the show, like earlier today, I was reading up that he was back and he was producing that match. That was kind of interesting. Happy that Shotzi got a shot. And we'll see if Charlotte comes back for Ronda. Next match, Tony?
Yes, so the next match was a triple threat match for the United States Championship. Seth Rick and Rollins versus Bobby Lashley versus Austin Theory. Another good match. I mean, it wasn't really, like, my favorite because it didn't, like, really, like, it didn't really wow me. But, I mean, the one thing that did wow me was at the end, Bobby Lashley hit the spear on Seth Freaking Rollins and Austin Theory pinned, and he ended up winning and becoming the new United States champion. But I will say, though, I mean, the new character that Triple H is building on Austin Theory right now, I think it was the appropriate time to put the title back on him. So I definitely think that with his new character, like something, you know, big, it will happen from this during his title run.
Yeah. It was interesting that Rollins lost the title this soon. Lashley has been on the roll, so it was interesting that Theory got the win, given how his character has kind of been broken down. Like, he's been losing a lot, lost his cash in the Rollins, so this was kind of like a redemption for him, losing that Money in the Bank briefcase and that Rollins cash in. So I guess there is a method to how he's been winning and losing lately. We'll see how long Theory holds this title. Does he lose it at Royal Rumble? Does he lose it later than that? We'll see. There's plenty of time before then and WrestleMania, so we'll see how long he keeps it. I think Lashley at some point might get it back because he's just been their monster on Raw, so we'll see. And main event.
And the final match is the men's War Games match. The Brawling Brutes, Drew McIntyre and Kevin Owens versus the Bloodline, Roman Reigns, Sami Zayn, Solo Sikoa, and The Usos. Also an amazing match, like pretty decent, I will say. But the most shocking part was Sami Zayn turning on Kevin Owens with the low blow. And because of that, like, the Bloodline picked up the win, and he has been accepted into the Bloodline. Mm-hmm. But, oh, man, like, when I saw that, because, like, you know, at first, like, I thought maybe, like, he was going to turn on Bloodline and, like, they'll, like, lose, like, their first match in a while. But, I mean, it totally makes sense for him to do that because, like, we have seen, Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens have been a rival that we've been seeing since their time at NXT. And, like, I think this is definitely...
And prior, yeah.
Yeah, this is, like, the next, like, big step to their rivalry.
Yeah, this is... Even earlier in the show, it was about how Sami... They're building this matchup that... The Bloodline wasn't sure where his loyalty was, and he was talking to Kevin Owens backstage, and Sami told Reigns that he lied to one of the Usos, I think Jay, about him talking to Kevin Owens or not. And then, the finish was interesting, how he you know, low blow Kevin Owens, and then gave him the Huluva kick and said the Uso splash the bloodline for them to get the win. It was interesting given Sami and Kevin's history, not just in WWE, but prior to that, prior to WWE as well. And then they embraced after hugs, posed together after to finish the show. The men's War Games match had a lot more story, and it was more about the bloodline, Sami. The women's match, I guess it was just because Becky Lynch is returning from injury. That was the big story in that one. And just damage control. Yeah, go ahead.
Actually, I want to touch up on, like, you know, there was, like, a lot of talk about Sasha Banks coming back since they were in Boston. And she's
right.
going to be the final member. But it does make sense for them to put Becky in this match because of damage control attacking her the day after SummerSlam injuring her. We don't know when Sasha is coming back, but I know there has been rumors that she is coming back very soon.
That's the thing. I've heard rumors about her trademarking certain trademarks, probably like stage names. So I'm thinking she's out, but that doesn't mean that she's out. She could just be trademarking names just so that way when her contract finishes up, she could still probably have time in her contract left. I'm just not sure. I think, yeah, Boston would have been a good time to return her, given her home state. But, we'll see if she ever comes back.
Most definitely.
The SmackDown Women's title match, I think with Shayna Baszler being there, the only way if Shotzi won is if Shayna got involved somehow, not to turn on Ronda, but just like some sort of weird distraction finish, which would have been anticlimactic. But I think with Shayna involved, there was no way Shotzi was gonna win. That's just the other factor involved. I thought the introduction of the show was cool with Ozzy Osbourne. They wanted to get him there to perform, but it was a scheduling thing, so Triple H said, I think, after the show. At least them doing a pre-tape was neat with him in the chair kind of lip-syncing to War Games and having the WWE videos in between. Him kind of introducing the show that way. That's pretty neat, and how they use the War Pigs as like the pay-per-view theme for War Games. Usually, the Survivor Series it's like Raw versus SmackDown every year, and it's kind of way too played out, too formulaic. But with the War Games, it was a change-up at least. That was cool, like seeing that on the main roster. They've been doing War Games matches on NXT, but it was neat seeing on the main roster. And I know they usually do these brand versus brand tag team matches, but this was a nice change to just run of the phoning it in type of pay-per-view in the last few years. So this was a neat change up with War Games. Tony, you were going to say something?
Oh, yeah. I want to, as we are talking about War Games, I do want to bring up the top 10 War Game matches. I definitely want to get John into this. I know War Games was around the time when John was watching wrestling, but like I want to add John real quick. When they brought back War Games to to the main roster. Like, how did you feel about that? Because I know, like, he was around when War Games started.
Well, War Games to me comes from the movie starring Matthew Broderick, War Games, which was a phenomenally successful film. And, you know, I was kind of surprised they were able to use the name, but it's a good name. It's descriptive, and I like it. But I just do remember, the movie War Games with Matthew Broderick a long, long time ago. It was a cool movie. I remember going out to see it. So that's my answer to that question, okay?
John, it's funny you say that. Oh, by the way, our guest, he's listening in, so he might be called in. But the whole War Games match was actually inspired by the Mad Max Thunderdome, Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome movie. So it was inspired by a movie.
Yeah, I think the War Games movie with Matthew Broderick was before that. But that's neither here nor there. It's a great name, and it's always good to use good names that we all enjoy. And yes, now if we'll hold on just a minute, is this Humphrey DuPont IV the greatest wrestling manager of all time? Is that the Humphrey DuPont that we have on tonight?
That's the rumor that goes around, gentlemen. I'm sorry. I wrote down 7:45, and then when I was calling, I saw 7:25 on the message, and I'm just old age coming at you fast, so I apologize.
But
as soon as I realized my mistake,
listen,
I called.
You just stop. We are thrilled to have you. It's great to have a manager of your stature on here on Pro Wrestling Interviews, and I wanted to thank you. You and I had a conversation a long, long time ago, and that's just so good to have you here. And I'm going to turn it back over to Steve to welcome you, other than the way I welcomed you. We're glad to have you here, Humphrey. Okay, Steve.
Well, that was
back
a
to
very
you.
Hearty welcome, so thank you.
All right.
Yeah, we got a manager of champions, Humphrey DuPont IV, on, and very glad to have him on. Humphrey, did you have your last match recently, or is that coming up?
Well, that... I decided I'd done enough, you know, and I got to be honest, like, I still love the 10 minutes, 15 minutes between the ropes and, being in the locker room today. But, I mean, I've got a 17-year-old son, a 16-year-old, 15-year-old daughter playing a bunch of sports, and those 5-hour and 4-hour rides back and forth were just, you know, starting to play on me a little bit. But the answer to that question is I am not officially done. Sometimes this spring in Mechanicsville at the Little League Association, there will be one final match. Opponent to be determined. Should be in a cage. It's going to be a fundraiser for Alley High School Tennis, as well as RBA 360, which is a travel baseball team around here. So we're hoping to put a pretty good show together. I think you'll start seeing little snippets of what's going to happen sometime around Christmas. But, yeah, I'm excited. I was stupid, and, you know, I put it out there on Facebook. I had quite a few people saying you can't hang it up on Facebook. Literally that same day, I got a call from a wrestling promotion in West Virginia asking me. They were like, Kyle, they were like, or Humphrey, they were like, you can't quit because we're doing Dave Hebner's memorial show on the 28th, which of October, which Dave, like, I don't know if you guys know, but him and I were very close. I pretty much drove him around the last, you know, 5 to 10 years, you know, the shows, and we drank some beers together, and so I was like, all right, I'm in, and then ended up getting walking pneumonia, so I couldn't do it anyway. I'll shut up.
Yeah.
No. Go ahead, Tony.
Hey, Humphrey, this is Tony. First of all, welcome to the show. We're glad to have you. We were just talking about you about like a couple weeks ago, because we had the guy that you manage, Ethan Cross, on the show, and we were just, like, talking about, like, him, like, you two together, and DXW, and man, like, you're, like, one of the best managers here in the Richmond area.
I appreciate it. I'm certainly the oldest. But I feel good. Like I said, I still think, like, between the folks, those 10 or 15 minutes, I really still feel I don't perform at any less level than I ever did. it's just a time thing, you know. So I'm, you know, I'm flattered you guys said that. But, you know, Virginia, you got like some great managers came out here. Neil Sharkey's awesome. Shoot, Ace Dalton was good. There's quite a few good managers came out of Virginia. So I'm flattered you guys didn't even say that.
Dr. John, I tell you what, we certainly respect what you have done. You are a great manager. That you were not a great manager, you are a great manager, and we will always think of you as being in the business, even if you say you're going to leave. Nah, maybe not. So we'll just keep you as one of the greatest managers of all time. And you're up there with George Two-Ton Harrison. Now, Humphrey, do you remember George Two-Ton Harrison?
Dude, he was getting pinned at every show I went to at the Coliseum when I was like 8 to 15 years old. George Two-Ton Harrison. Half the time he was wrestling Herb Gallant.
and he was managing Aldo Bogni and Bronco Lubitsch. Oh, my God.
I remember that. So at the very end, though, he was just a jobber wrestler in Mid-Atlantic, you know, and it's like him and who else? Who did the Kiwi leg roll? Abe Jacobs. They were like valiant competitors. Abe Jacobs, if he got the Kiwi leg roll on you, that meant that you were going to win in about a minute because he would get it on you and eventually you would hit the ropes and they would take it over pretty quick. But they always gave him that hope spot where he got to get it on you.
Yeah, I tell you what, I'm glad you remember some of those great days in wrestling like I do. Thanks a lot for that one. Yes, you're still a great manager. You are. Back to you guys. I'm sorry. Humphrey and I got lots of stuff to discuss.
Hold on. This is Mid-Atlantic? What territory are you guys talking about?
We're talking Mid-Atlantic. We were talking 70s, you know. My first shows, I was 12 years old, which is 47 years ago, and I went to the Coliseum. I saw Blackjack. The main event was Blackjack Mulligan versus Rufus R. Jones in a cotton field match. But, like, they had Dino Bravo versus Angelo Mosca was, like, for the Mid-Atlantic title. That was, like, the fourth match. And I'm telling you, back then, you're talking 1975, I'm not exaggerating. Like, the match ended. There was no security around him. Angelo Mosca was, like, fighting his way back. Bottles were flying. I was like, what is going on here? But this is awesome, you know. And I saw Flair Wahoo that night. I saw the Poffos, Lanny, Angelo, and Randy versus Tiger Conway, his dad, and somebody else. But the main event that night was Mulligan and Rufus R. Jones. And if Rufus beat Mulligan, he got 5 extra minutes in what they called a cotton field match, which Rufus had a special glove he said he wore back on the cotton fields. That, you know, was awful. And because, you know, Mulligan had a glove that he wore. Rufus wanted to even the score. And, of course, he won the match. He got his 5 minutes with Mulligan and just beat the living heck out of him. It was an adrenaline rush. My favorite matches at the Coliseum, Baron Von Raschke, Paul Jones versus Steamboat and Youngblood. That's one of the most underrated tag teams ever, the Baron and Paul Jones. They were so good.
I'm sure John agrees. I think one of his favorite wrestlers is Paul Jones. And
I will say that Paul Jones was one incredible. He was a junior heavyweight, right?
Yeah.
Right, Humphrey. He was a junior heavyweight because he used to wrestle with Nelson Royal, who was the world junior heavyweight champion, at least in our world, Mid-Atlantic. And I'll tell you what, I remember when we were wrestling. I was with PWF. Professional Wrestling Federation, or never mind, we'll call it the PWF. And we were there in Mooresville, and Paul Jones and Nelson Royal came in, and the Italian Stallion couldn't pull me away from them. I talked with those guys for an hour. That was probably the greatest hour of my life in wrestling.
I bet.
To talk to Paul Jones and Nelson Royal. I mean, they were bitter enemies, but back there in the dressing room, they were absolutely the best of friends, and it was something that a 22-year-old just went crazy over. I mean,
oh my God.
There's no, you know, Humphrey, there's no price that I can put on that hour that I spent with Paul Jones and Nelson Royal. God, they were great. They were such gentlemen. They told me they told me everything. They were absolutely the best people in the world. And you know, wrestling today, I want to ask you a reflective question, if I may. I mean, today wrestling, the wrestlers, I mean, Ethan Cross. Now, first of all, Ethan Cross is a gentleman. Ethan Cross was extremely nice on our show. But I think today, by and large, the big guys, the world champions, the whatever you want to call them, they are not the caliber of gentlemen that we had back in Mid-Atlantic, are they?
That's tough. So athletically, they may be superior, but as far as going seven nights a week and literally beating the living hell out of each other, and a lot of them being Broadways, I mean, Flair was Broadway seven night a week, you know, 60 minutes, and legitimately just beating the living crap out of whoever he was wrestling, you know? And so they don't have that grind that those guys back then had, you know? And I think, like, my grind, I would go to Delaware for Thursday, Friday, Saturday to work for ECWA. I was bartending at a place called Sidewalk Cafe in Richmond where I was making $400 a night, you know, having a blast, playing my own music, just a lot of fun. I would go to Delaware and miss my Friday and Saturday shift, you know, like $800 worth of money, to make $75 for the three nights combined, of course, you know. And, you know, after lodging and gas and eating, you're coming home negative $400 or $500, even back then, you know. And sometimes that's because we'd go to Delaware State Park and bet on the ponies. But that was – do you guys remember Simon Diamond?
Yes.
Yeah, wasn't he in WWE?
Simon Diamond.
So Simon Diamond was my good buddy Pat Kenny. And we played – I played very, very little baseball at BCU. I played a fall, but he played for a couple years. And after he was done in college, he became Lance Diamond. And he said ECWA, he kept telling me, Kyle, you should be a mouthpiece and – blah, blah, blah. And, I went up there. I was a good guy for 6 months, a face manager. And then right when I was about to turn it in, honest to God, cause it was just so money-wise, it wasn't making sense. And me as a face didn't make a lot of sense to me. I ended up going in and hitting my own guy with the chair like four or five times. The Bushwhackers were there that night. I was running for my life, and Luke looked at me and goes, great sell, mate. And those guys, they're awesome. So I worked a ton of shows with them with UCW. And the first question, I don't know if they thought I was like the hoodlum guy in the bunch or what, they would always walk in and go, Humphrey, is this a dry county? Like, there's no dry counties hardly in Virginia, but that was their first question every single time.
Oh, man.
Yep.
And Humphrey, this is so I have to say, like, the Bushwhackers, I would say, were best tag team entertainers back in the day. Like, when you think of the Bushwhackers, you think of, like, their matches and, like, what they did behind the scenes. And, you know, those guys are just not only, like, the best wrestlers, but they're the most funniest people that you can watch on TV.
And
you
also, they're also one of the most violent teams ever as Sheepherders.
Yes.
I believe they had barbed wire matches.
You took it out. So when they were the Sheepherders, They were as violent as anybody had ever seen. And then suddenly they became the Bushwhackers, and they became the most affable guys ever. And I'm sure at that age they were probably like, thank you, Lord, for this gimmick, because, you know, they weren't, you know, going in, like you were saying, those violent matches every night. Because when they were the Sheepherders, that's legit what they were doing. It was just, you know, all out every night war. They were the bad guys and taking a beating, you know.
I got to ask, since you mentioned Simon Diamond, I didn't even know he was BC. I didn't even know he was a BCU guy. Why he retired in 06?
Yes.
Is what I read?
Yeah. He became an agent at TNA and worked with them forever. And right now, I'm almost positive he's the head of talent relations for NWA, for Billy Corgan. He's either that or right below it. But he has a lot to do with talent relations. And I've never, ever reached out to him. I'm too damn old. But, I know he works for NWA for sure, and he's got a decent job with them. Great guy. Absolutely great guy. One night we went, and it was like in Rehoboth Beach. It was so cold, and the place had no heat, and there were probably 10 people in there. I got thrown over the top rope, hit my eye on the apron, like my eyebrow, and then just straight down to the ground, like as hard as I've ever done anything in my life. And the promoter comes running from the back. I remember looking at him and, like, winking like I was okay. I was on another planet. But anyway, I ended up going to the hospital, concussion, you know, big old gash in my eye. Next morning, we stayed at Pat Kenny, Lance Diamond's house that night, Simon Diamond. And the next morning, I came down, and I could tell, like, my one eye was completely shut, and the other one, I could barely see out of it, but I could see. Miss Kenny looks at me. She just goes, "Patrick, what in the hell did they do to Kyle last night?" he goes, "I wasn't in the match, Mom. I would have protected him." Nobody could have protected me from those things. But he's a funny dude, man. We used to try really hard to make the other break, you know, when we were doing promos. I got to be honest, I think I was better at it than him. Mm-hmm. He'd probably tell you otherwise. He'd probably tell you he was better than me.
I got to ask you, you've probably seen a lot. How do you think Virginia wrestling has changed since when you started to now?
God, man, that's a great question. To me, it's become – so when the – you know, I go back so far – like in the 90s and early 2000s, I was with Ultimate Championship Wrestling, the version with the Woodies, not the current, but the Woodies version. We were working, you know, consistently. This doesn't sound like a lot, but like 5 or 6 nights a month, you know. So you'd have a couple weekends full, maybe 3 weekends full and one off. But to me, there's no consistency in running in the same venues. So you can't – it's tough to build that loyal – base, and it's tough to tell a story other than the story you tell in the ring. You know, so as far as like building to something or having a crescendo like we could back then, even GXW, we were, you know, we were every other week. We were running TV a little bit. And, you know, and those shows were packed, but we were able to, because we were doing stuff so consistently, able to, like, you know, have a payoff and build to something, you know, instead of just trying to cram it all into one show you have every 3 or 4 months or every 2 months or whatever, you know. And so CPW, I worked with them, and they were good. We had a consistent thing at King William where we went once a month, and, you know, that was enough that they could keep up with us and we could build up the stuff. But that, to me, is the hardest thing. It seems like you're doing a lot of fairs and, you know, just venues. Like, you don't have that consistent venue you always go to where everybody's like, all right, there he is, you know. And so for me, like when we go to places, you know, I've got to come out and immediately make them hate me, you know, and do something to make them, hey, that guy's a jerk and I need to, you know, not like him. And instead of them feeling sympathy for something, how that old guy come out there? How that guy, you know. And so I, you know, but the biggest thing to me is it's tough to tell a story. I'll tell you, KR Superstar, he'd be a great guest for you guys to have sometime. He's an interesting cat. We've done a lot together. He was an enemy of mine. He was my, you know, my favorite gimmick of my life that I've ever done, and I've done a lot of stupid ones, but him and I as the World Handicap Match Champions is the best ever. We'll go up, you know, we go up to people, we go, we've never backed out from a 2-on-1 fight. Who has? You know? And, you know, and it's just the most chicken shit kind of gimmick you could ever have, but it's perfect. But that guy, he's an interesting cat too. I'll tell you a funny story about him. He's a skydiver, like a badass, like, you know, when they have races in Bristol and stuff, he would come parachuting or skydiving in, and he's retired now. But I did a battle royal with him where he was my, you know, my number one enemy. So my thing was, when I was going to get him out, I was going to throw him out. So I go straight toward him, but before the match, I'm going to break kayfabe. He said, "Kyle," he goes, "you have to be really careful throwing me out because I'm scared of heights." I'm like, "Excuse me?" He goes, "Yeah, man, I'm definitely afraid of heights." I was like, "You're telling me you'll jump out of a plane, but you won't go over the top rope?" "Yeah, that's what I'm telling you." And so this fool will jump out of a plane, but won't go over the top rope. And I thought he was ribbing me, you know. And no, it was bitch fact.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. I think even Mick Foley, like, if he knew how high it would have been, he wouldn't have fallen off that cell. But, yeah.
Don't do that
leg drop
that Lynch did last night.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was impressive.
Drop. And then Io Sky did that crazy moonsault. That was nuts.
Yeah, that was badass, too. But when you're Becky Lynch and you're, you know, you're the golden ticket, I mean, for her to go up there and do that, I thought was pretty badass. You know, I mean, just very impressive. But that was a good
especially
match. That girls' war game was great.
Yeah, we were just talking about war games earlier. Sorry, Tony. I think Tony and I wanted to know if you had a favorite War Games match and, you know, all of the War Games match history.
I tell you, Sammy was so awesome last night. And, you know, it's hard not to love. And then, you know, just to see the Usos and everybody embrace him after the match, it was just awesome. Because I think about 75% of people thought last night was going to be the end of that, you know, that they were going to turn on him either during or after that match. And to see them do the exact opposite was just beautiful.
Actually,
go ahead,
speaking of war games, and I'm glad you're here because you can, like, be involved in this too, but and everyone can be involved in this too, but I have the top 10 best war game matches of all time.
Wow.
And I'm getting started here. So at number 10 is the NWO, Hollywood Hogan, Kevin Nash, Sting, and Scott Hall versus Team WCW, R. Anderson, Lex Luger, Ric Flair, and Sting again. But that was for WCW Fall Brawl 1996.
That's a hell of a match. That's an NWO was like just flaming hot.
Number nine, Sting, Lex Luger, The Yellow Dog, and El Grande versus Barry Windham, Nikita Koloff, Kevin Sullivan, and One Man Gang, WCW, The Great American Bash Tour, 1991.
Go.
Oh, what are you going to say?
Go ahead. I thought that was an interesting choice. Go ahead.
So, next match was, number eight, the Undisputed Era, Adam Cole, Bobby Fish, and Kyle O'Reilly versus Sanity, Alexander Wolf, Eric Young, and Killian Dane versus Roger Strong and the Authors of Pain.
Yeah, I honestly, I didn't see that one, so I can't comment on it. The other two, I did.
Number seven, Steve Williams, The Midnight Express, and The Road Warriors versus The Fabulous Freebirds and the Samoan SWAT team.
So what Freebirds was it? Was it Gordy and Hayes?
Jimmy Garvin.
Michael Hayes.
Okay.
I'm a
Freebird
Mark.
Oh, best tag team ever.
Yeah,
number six, the Four Horsemen, Arn Anderson, Barry Windham, J.J. Dillon, Ric Flair, and Holly Blanchard versus Dusty Rhodes, Lex Luger, Nikita Koloff, Paul Ellering, and Steve Williams.
Which show is that from?
The NWA, The Great American Bash Tour, 1988.
Damn, that's a strong one in 1988.
At number five, Dusty Rhodes, Nikita Koloff, Paul Ellering, and the Road Warriors versus the Four Horsemen, Arn Anderson, Lex Luger, Ric Flair, and Tully Blanchard, and The War Machine, NWA, The Great American Bash Tour, 1987.
Who was The War Machine? Was it somebody notable? I can't remember that dude.
I don't.
Yeah, I went over my head.
Well, I know. Because I remember J.J. Dillon was supposed to be in that match, but he got injured by The War Machine. But I don't remember who The War Machine was, though.
Right on. Okay.
Wait a minute. The War Machine was Big Bubba Rogers.
Aha!
Oh, okay.
That's correct. Now that you said that, yep. Good call.
Number four, Sting Squadron, Barry Windham, Dusty Rhodes, Nikita Koloff, Ricky Steamboat, and Sting versus the Dangerous Alliance, Arn Anderson, Beautiful Bobby, Larry Zbyszko, Rick Rude, and Steve Austin. WCW Wrestler War 1992.
That's a great match.
Number three, Flying Brian, Sting, and the Steiner Brothers versus Larry Zbyszko and the Four Horsemen, Barry Windham, Ric Flair, and Sid Vicious.
That's probably the one where Sid was beating up Pillman, and I think he was, like, just pressing him against the cage or powerbombing Pillman. Like, I just remember Sid beating up Pillman in that match. And it was
yeah,
pretty brutal.
I kind of remember that. Yeah, I remember that, too.
Number two, Dusty Rhodes, Dustin Rhodes, and the Nasty Boys versus the Stunt Stable, Arn Anderson, Buckhouse Buck, Colt, Robert Parker, and Terry Funk. Fall Brawl,
1994. Nice.
You got a lot of hoodlums on that, that heel side.
And at number one, the Royal Warriors, Nikita Koloff, Dusty Rhodes, and Paul Ellering versus the Four Horsemen, Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, Lex Luger, Tully Blanchard, and J.J. Dillon.
Yeah, right on. I like that. Yeah. So I got a quick question for you, or all you guys. What is your favorite grouping of the Four Horsemen?
Oof. John, you go first.
Me?
I'm going last.
Okay. All right. I'm going to say something. I don't care if it makes everybody mad. As long as Ric Flair was in there, it's all that mattered to me.
Woo!
Bumper, you can tell, I am the world's biggest Ric Flair fan.
I thought you would have just went with the first one with Ole in there. I know this might be unpopular, but I kind of like Malenko and Benoit in the group. They were, like, legit technical wrestlers.
Solid dudes.
And also, Barry Windham, I think,
yeah,
is probably one of the more underrated Horsemen members.
Yeah, I agree with that. So my favorite is definitely Flair, Tully Arn, and Windham with JJ. But I also like the old version. So I think the greatest Horseman of all time was obviously Paul Roma.
Okay, now, this is Dr. John. Where did that come from?
That came from the falsehoods of mankind.
Okay, I interviewed him when he was the commissioner of something that came along
North American Wrestling Association.
NAWA.
I think it was North American.
That's right. NAWA. That's right. Now he was
yeah,
pretty good. The rest of them were just kind of like, well, I don't know about that. Paul Roma. I never thought I would hear that name again. Okay. All right.
Yeah,
I
can't even believe that came out.
But Tony, real quick, do you have a favorite Four Horsemen lineup or member?
Oh, man. I would say the original one. It's because, like, I think because of the very first Four Horsemen, like, they have, like, they, like, build both Rick, Arn, Telly, JJ, and Barry, like, during the time because at the time, like, you know, Tully and Arn became a team as the Brainbusters at the time. And,
mm-hmm,
yeah, I have to say the very first ones.
And also, Arn Anderson, just one of the best wrestlers ever. I know Regal spoke highly about him and vice versa. But since we're Tony, I got some more questions for Humphrey. How did you get started working with Ethan Cross and Corey Bush? And was that in GXW or is that prior when you were working with Ethan and Corey originally?
Yeah, great question. I think in Virginia pretty much had managed the Woodies, you know, big Mr. Big Stuff and Danny Woody. Sometimes it was Danny Whalen, little stuff. For the most part, in Latin Lover, you know. And then in GXW, I kind of had some guys come and go. Just wasn't quite, you know, wasn't more, they wasn't working, but they weren't, like, consistent guys on the show. So a few shows in, one of the promoters and one of my dearest friends, Ron Cromarty, the Pharaoh, I don't know if you remember him, he came right to college. And we talked about Ethan. I was like, that's a perfect fit, you know, because, you know, Ethan will be the first one to tell you he doesn't enjoy the microphone in his hand, you know, I mean, and I'll be the first one to tell you that I love that son of a bitch in my hand. And so that was the first guy we brought along. And then, you know, I'd had the DuPont family all the way back in ECWA with Pat Kenny and Crowbar. So Crowbar from WCW, he was with us back then. He was Devin Storm. So I had Devin Storm, who again is Crowbar. I had Lance Diamond, who became Simon Diamond. And Billy Kidman at one point was in with us. We had, like, just killer guys, but those two were, like, the juggernauts. And then I went to the Woodies and then got Ethan. And then Corey was with Titan. Y'all know Titan from, like, up Northern Virginia, somewhere around there. But they were the GXW tag champs. And the Woodies took them down. And then Corey was kind of – they were kind of feuding. He was kind of on his own. And Corey is a great mouthpiece. Like, Corey needs nobody to talk for him. He's funny. He's smart. He's all those things. He's a stand-up comic. But we when they came to Corey and I, we both were kind of like, okay, we're going to make this work. You know, two big mouths. We're going to make it work. And we made it work. And, like, the three of us have kind of run together for, like, about, I'd say, 8 years now. And we still have and done it this year as a group. And my favorite shows, those guys will definitely both be on the show, you know, in March or April when we do that show at Mechanicsville Little League. But, yeah, they're two of my favorites. I hope to get the Woodies. They can't wrestle, but they'll be there. And, you know, try to get as many DuPont family members from the past. We did a killer thing with years ago for the newer UCW in Ashland. It was a – they had – KR had done all this dumb stuff to me. So, basically, it was KR with Mr. Big Stuff, who he was suddenly managing, but I had managed for, like, 20 years, versus myself and a former DuPont family member. So we had like 25 guys that had come and gone, you know, and so I'm, you know, like I've had Ivan Koloff, the Honky Tonk Man, and was able to get a lot of them to send me little snippets just going, we're there for you, you know. So I put this phenomenal, Ronnie Daval put it together for me, just snippets of all these guys like, I got your back, I'll be there, you know. And it was, you know, Bill Eady, the Devilish Max, I mean, I managed him a ton in the 90s and 2000s. He's a great guy. One night, I'll tell you, you will never meet a more articulate, kind guy than Bill Eady, but God forbid you do him stupid. I've been so lucky to manage Bill a ton. I've managed him as a superstar. I've managed him as Demolition Axe, face, heel, both. Anyway, we wrestled in Fork Union, probably about 1999, where Bill's still probably, he's probably about 50 then, but I mean, he's a kick-ass 50, you know, and he's a strong cut dude. Again, mild manner. So we're at Fork Union. This guy we're wrestling is a guy named Ray Storm. He ended up being around for a while. But Ray came up to us and looked Bill in the eye and said, Mr. Eady, goes, I just got to tell you, I can't lose a match in my hometown tonight. So you're going to tell me this green guy from 1 year of wrestling is going to come up to Bill Eady. Instead of Bill Eady having the chance to just say, hey, you know what makes sense? Why don't I put you over by DQ? You know, which is exactly what he would have done. Bill Eady goes, yep, totally agree with you. And he goes, we'll do a DQ. I swear to the Lord, Bill Eady beat the living shit out of this guy. He took my briefcases. There were pieces just flying off like 10 yards into the crowd. I'll tell you a great one. So the Woodies, back in the day, their dad was the promoter, and he was a card. He was tough, but he was no bullshit. And he, you know, if you were good, he was good. You try to bullshit him, he'd take it out of you. So the first match of the night at the Augusta County Fair, Bushwhackers were on this card. Anyway, first match night was his own son, Wesley Woody, who I believe was like the Scarecrow, and he was teaming with Stephen Bell, who was a Sinister. So together they were probably about 900 pounds. That's not even an exaggeration. Good guys, good workers for the most part. Stephen's a really good worker. Wesley's more of a gimmick guy. But then they were wrestling, L.A. Tank and Cannonball Jones. So this first match tonight, you can't have a clunker. The first match people, it's funny, like, when you first start wrestling, people be like, I hate going out first match. It's bullshit, you know. First match of the night is about as important as any match is going to be, because you go out there and lay an egg, you set a shit tone for the whole night where it's just quiet. You go out there and set that son of a bitch on fire, you set a tone for the night, and it makes the people behind you want to come out there and do better than you did. You know, so if you set a low-ass bar, you know, you're just going to have a low-ass show. Anyway, so Mr. Woody starts pacing around. He's watching this match, and I'm in this, like, makeshift tent with his other son, Big Stuff, who I manage. And he's like, those son of a bitches are embarrassing me. He's like, hey, it ain't worth a shit, you know, and just walking around pacing. He looks at me, and he looks at his son. This is after about 3 or 4 minutes. He just goes, DuPont, stuff, grab some weapons and get those motherfuckers out of my ring right now. So literally, without them knowing, like, I've got a kendo stick in my briefcase, Big Stuff got, like, all sorts of, and we just head to the ring. There's four guys. All their eyes are about popping out of their heads. They don't know what we're doing. We're in there just literally hitting them with everything we got. Hitting them with a kendo stick. Mr. Woody said, get the fuck out of this ring. You're embarrassing it. But one of the funniest parts is Big Stuff is having to do this to his own brother. So we clear the ring. I mean, legit, you know. And so at the time, I was the intergender champion. Well, now we had to kill some time because that match was like 10-15 minutes, and gone about 5. So I just get on the mic, and I'm like, if there's any stupid girl here in Augusta County that wants some of this, come and get it. Next thing you know, like, the most athletic girl you've ever seen in your life, about 150, just comes charging to the ring. I'm like, son of a bitch, I'm about to get my ass kicked. And they some guy held her back, but, man, to see the to go in and beat people up and make all four of them, like, you know, when it's not expected, it was just one of those funny things. There was a dude named, same guy, Sinister Stephen Bell. I'll shut up and say, last story. Battle Royal in Emporia. I also managed Honky Tonk a lot. On the same night, it was Honky Tonk and Demolition Axe were going to be the main. So I'm sitting there with them, and we're listening to them go through the card. And Stephen Bell was this gifted worker, but when he would get in front of the crowd, he would often work himself up where he would throw up. So he'd have to, you know, go out of the ring, throw up on the ground, whatever. So they're going through the car. They're like, Battle Royal, Sinister, you're going over. And I'm like, holy shit, how's he going to make it to the end? And immediately Mr. Woody's like, if you got to get sick, get the hell out of my ring. And, you know, Jimmy Joe, you're going over. So the Honky Tonk Man, myself, and Superstar sitting there, or Dylan Smack. And I'm like, there's no fucking way he survives. And Honky goes, that's the kid that pukes? I was like, yeah. He goes, I got 5, say he doesn't make it. And Edie was like, Superstar was like, I got 5. I was like, you know, I'm covering your bets. Son of a bitch, they go in the ring. I swear to God, without them knowing, we've got money on it. Every wrestler seems to have him in the corner just hitting him in his stomach. And I'm like behind the curtain going, lay off the stomach. Come on, you know. And anyway, he survives. I win the money. I get 5 ones from Honky and a 5 from Bill. And we're waiting for him to come through. And I'm the next match. I've got my jacket on behind the curtain. He comes through the curtain. I've got $10 in my hand. I was like, you just want me $10. As I'm saying that, he throws up on my shoes. Oh, man. I didn't know I was going to be so verbose tonight, but, yeah, funny.
Humphrey, that popped me that you mentioned you managed Devin Storm earlier. I kind of like his promos on Twitter. He's very captivating, kind of underrated talker. Yeah, very nice guy. And also, I have to ask this while we still have some time. Did you ever load up – how often did you load up that briefcase? Was it like Pulp Fiction? Was it a mystery, or did you load it up often?
We keep just very important confidential documents in there. It was never to be used as a weapon. Anytime that briefcase has been involved in a match, it's usually because somebody accidentally ran into it. And I'm sticking to my story.
One of my favorite matches from GCW was Corey and our former co-host Stroh. That was one of my favorite DuPont family
so much
matches.
Fun. So much fun. Do you remember when I kidnapped Dorothy?
I got one more story.
This is a good one. I'll tell you a good Stroh story. So do you talk to Rob anymore?
Yeah, we still talk to him.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
This is Dr. John. I just saw him today. I saw him this weekend at the Grandstand Comic Con. He was doing great. Yeah, Rob, he was great. And we talked about old times, about him and I on the road. Oh my God, it was great. We had a good time. Now, he's in good humor, and it was good to see him. He's temporarily out west, and we'll see when he's coming back.
Right. Well, I just saw him in a movie that Rob Cromartie did. It was called Hybrid. I saw it at Ashland Theater a couple of weeks ago, and Rob was in it. But when Corey and Rob were feuding, the night he actually won the U.S. title from him, while he celebrated, I kidnapped Dorothy. So I took Dorothy home, you know, and I was doing all this dumbass shit. God, if you could ever look up the 12 Nights of Christmas with Dorothy, I did a different night.
Oh, I remember that.
Oh, I had like my 8-year-old son doing it with me. It was so awesome. Well, Rob calls me up. He's like, Kyle, man. He goes, I don't mean any disrespect. He goes, can you go a little easy on those promos? He goes, I think they're going to cost me some booking. I was like, Rob, they're not going to cost you any booking. And he goes, you're laying it on me pretty hard. I was like, I'm having fun. But he was like, yeah, you're right. But he was protective of his giving. But we kidnapped Dorothy, and he ended up getting her back. And I'll tell you, so I bought another Dorothy, the one that he had, so that I'd have one on my hands, you know, so I could film shit and stuff. It's still in my wife and I's closet, and like about once a year, it'll just make some noise and scare the crap out. It must have the world's best batteries of all time. But yeah, Dorothy 2 in my closet right now.
Wow.
But hey,
the doppelganger.
My favorite match from GFW was Ethan Cross versus Mr. Grimm for the TV title.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So did y'all see, is that the one, are you talking about the one where you put him in the body bag and came off of the top rope with a 360 to end it?
Yep.
That was crazy.
Yep.
So we get to the back. I got banished from ringside, so I was already back there. And Jay, Ethan came back there and immediately collapsed. And we were freaking out. He ended up being dehydrated, but, I mean, it was scary. And that was one of the most incredibly physical matches I've ever been ringside for. You guys know Ace Montana?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I got a good Ace story. So, y'all, Ace is like a very, very charismatic guy and a really good worker for a big dude. But Ace doesn't always do exactly like we're supposed to do, you know, like it's laid out. And sometimes it bites him in the ass. It's not out of ill will or something. He just gets excited. He'll grab the mic or something when he's not supposed to. But anyway, he's done something like that. I think he and Pork Chop came running in on the Woodies and I one night, and they were just like, don't grab the mic. Just, you know, feed him up and get, you know, take a powder and, you know, scare him off. Well, of course, he had the mic like 1 second after we're leaving. He's like, dude, come on. You know, we're going to kick your ass and all stuff. And I'm thinking, man, you're fucking up, you know. And so the next show, they were like, and Ace is going to pay the price tonight for grabbing the mic last show. And I would do, like at GXW, we did the locker room thing. I was a guy who would lead the locker room talking. And I'd go through the matches, tell who's going to win, how much time, the ref, whatnot. And at the end, I would pick somebody that I knew was religious and say, hey, you want to lead us in a prayer? So I got Mr. Big Stuff to, you know, do a prayer. And basically, he was going to take on Kyle Gammon, who's just at the time was probably like 22 years old, just mean, strong, big. And Kyle was going to beat the crap out of him. That was going to be Ace's penalty. And Kyle was Cobra Commander, like somebody that had never been there before. It was him versus Ace Montana first. So anyway, we do the prayer, and at the end of it, the same guy, Ron Cromartie, who directed Hybrid that Rob Kelly was in, he's one of the promoters. Mm-hmm. He just goes, may God help Ace Montana, especially tonight. Like, added on to the prayer, you know. We're all like, oh, Ace is like going, man, you got to lay it in. Make sure you're laying it in snug and all this stuff. And so we get into the ring. I've got the best seat in the house, so I'm managing, you know. Dude, this kid attacks Ace like the guy, he stole his lunch money. He was beating the crap out of him in the corner, punched him, and Ace down there. Easy, man. Come on, man. Hey, come on, man. 5 minutes ago, you were telling him to be snug and bring it. Now you're banging off. But I would have been banging off, too. He was getting clobbered. GXW is such a great, great, great thing, man. I'm missing a lot.
Real quick, any thoughts on the hybrid, that premiere? I was so glad to see you and other wrestlers there, Ellis and Timmy and others there.
Yeah, Timmy Danger, Neil Sharkey, Elliot. But what is Ellis Power? He goes by. Yeah, there were quite a few. I saw Steve, like I said, and but yeah, I thought it was great. I was actually still under the weather, but went and I enjoyed it. And I thought Rob was good in the film. Ellis played. Did you see on the credits Ellis Power? It just said, "Hood number one."
Yeah, it was
like
a wrestling extra.
Did y'all go celebrate after y'all go to that bar?
No, I had to get home and probably get ready for the that show that night. But how was it? Did you go?
I did not. I went home. I had been feeling that great. It was a Sunday, and I needed to watch some football too and be lazy.
I went with
a friend. Yeah.
I
had to catch up and get ready for the show.
Aaron Rodgers got picked off.
Quick question for me. What was it like seeing Timmy Danger win the David Hepner Cup?
That was a big thing for Timmy. And it's funny because I brought that up to him at the premiere of Hybrid. He was really, really thrilled. He said the only part he liked was he thought he'd get to keep the cup. And I was like, you should have got to keep the cup, like the Stanley Cup. Like, showed him. It would have been great to have him in bars drinking out of it and stuff like that. He was like, exactly. He didn't get to keep the cup, but I know it meant a lot to him, you know, just because Dave was such a central figure around here. And there in the person in the world that has a bad word to say about Dave Hepner. He was just a nice, nice dude. We would so Dave was funny. We would go to lunch a lot, and, you know, towards the end, we would always get a beer, and I would always buy the world's biggest beer. Like, you know, if it was a 40-ouncer there and a can, it had to be a can, but he drank Coors Light, and I drank High Life, and so we did a show for CPW, and Dave was starting to climb, but he was still doing five. Dave's last three count ever was counting us 1-2-3 at GXW, losing to KR, and I got a world title shot against Sledge Gibson, and we beat up all the rest to the point where they had to get Dave to come out of the crowd and make the count. And that was his last three count ever, which I love. It was KR who got count. It was still pretty fucking cool. And but Dave the car. So Becky goes to a CPW show with us, his daughter. She's in the back seat, and, you know, I have our beers in the cooler. As soon as the show in, we have our beers, and we weren't drinking and driving. So we drank them, and we get in the car. And Dave said, Rebecca, his wife, would always say, one beer, Humphrey, that's it. I was like, you know, it's going to be a big-ass beer. She goes, that's fine, just one. So we're driving home, and Dave's kind of quiet, and he just goes, Humphrey, pull over the car, we're getting four beer. Becky goes, Dad, Bob said only one. He goes, your mom here. So I just pulled that car over, and yeah, Dave was a cute guy, man. I miss him a lot, and he was funny, and I think a lot of Dave missed him a lot.
Yeah, I believe I was there when the Hepners were inducted into GXW Hall of Fame. It was cool to see Earl around and Dave at the events, just, you know, hanging out. I saw him at Big Time Wrestling. I think it was the last time I saw him when Bret Hart was there, and he had that segment with the Hepners. That was great.
I wish I'd been there for that. I flew it. I knew it was coming. I couldn't go. That is just I thought it might be coming. And but yeah, that was what I wish. At GXW Hall of Fame was cool. Dave, Earl was a big part of GXW. He had a lot to say. I'll tell you what, I managed Corey Bush versus Gordon Braswell, U.S. title, 0 Hour 7, which was like the GXW big pay-per-view. And that was back when I was just trying to get Corey on my size. So nobody knew where I was going. But Dave, they had agents in that. We usually didn't have agents. And my match is usually Ron or with Dave McLeod and say, you got to figure it out. They tell me what's going on, and we figure it out. But that night I had every match had an agent. And my agent for being a referee was Earl Hebner, which, you know, Earl and I drank beer together. So I liked that, and I knew it'd be a breeze. Well, about halfway through the night, the match is getting close, and all of a sudden Nick Aldis walks up. And Mickey was on the card. He said, Kyle, he goes, I'm your agent for your match. And I was like, okay. And I was like, for the whole match or just me? He goes, no, I'm supposed to help you with the reffing part. I said, okay. So I talked to Nick. And literally his plan was kind of backwards of what Earl and I had come up with. So I walked up to Earl, and I said, hey, man, I'm not trying to be a dick or stir anything up. I said, but, you know, Nick just came to me, told me he's an agent. He told me this, why don't we do this? He goes, Nick's a buddy of mine, but Nick's a fucking wrestler. I'm a fucking manager. I mean, fucking referee, and you're reffing, so I'm talking to you. Nick walks over, and Earl's like, hey, don't try to tell him about a wrestling match. He goes, you have no trouble wrestling. Nick was like, all right, you got it then. And so, yeah, I had Nick Aldis and Earl Hebner as my agent when I was a referee.
Wow.
That's pretty cool. So, anyway.
Yeah, that's cool.
All right, well, dude, yeah, I don't want to cut you off. I know I've talked forever, but this was a lot of fun.
No, yeah, it's been great. We're glad to finally have you on. And if you ever want to come on again and promote the next event, the fundraising event, that'd be great.
Thank you so much. When we do our event for that final match, if you guys would have me back, I'd love it.
Yeah.
That's great. That's great.
John.
Mr. DuPont, it certainly is. And I guess this is Dr. John. We're encroaching upon the witching hour for our show.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what? Humphrey DuPont IV, you are still as good as you were the first time I saw you at GWX. You are entertaining and really cool. So we want to thank you for being with us on Pro Wrestling Interviews. Okay, I'm going to give Tony and I'm going to give Steve 1 minute each to ask you a quick question, and then I'll ask you the closing question. Tony, what is your one-minute question for Humphrey DuPont IV?
Okay, that is easy. So I want to ask him, like, because of GXW, it really inspired me to become a wrestler, because, like, I've always wanted to, like, be in the wrestling business for so long. So I want to ask you any advice on being in the wrestling business.
I couldn't hear that very last part. I heard all the stuff about the inspiration. What was the last part?
What is your advice on being in the wrestling business?
I think the ones that do well with it, love it. You know, love. And the other thing, like I tell guys, don't be scared or afraid to step out of your comfort zone, because that's where you're going to succeed. I watched Jimmy Garvin the other night talking about, he said that he was riding the car with Ernie Ladd. He was Jimmy Garvin in Florida. He's a good wrestler. He's just Jimmy Garvin in black trunks. He said Ernie Ladd looked at him. He said, "Some bitch, you're never going to make a penny as Jimmy Garvin." He goes, "You won't headline shit." And he said he went home that night. He was like, God, he's right. You know, he'd been wrestling for years. He said he decided he was going to figure out a gimmick, and he thought of Buddy Rogers had a valet. So he's like, I'm going to get a valet and be the prettiest guy in Richmond and then wrestling. And guess what? He made tons of money after that. So, like, he was in his comfort zone, and once he stepped out of it, he killed it. You know, so you got to, A, put in the work, put in the grind, but, B, scared to take a chance.
Right.
Buddy, it's those
great
chances that make you, aren't they?
They are. They totally are, man. And, like, it's like you got it. And when you get that opportunity, man, you got to, you know, snag it. Because if you snag it once, they'll want you to do it twice. But if you screw it up that first time, it's going to be a long time before they ask you to do it again.
I'm sure you mentioned it earlier.
All right, Tony, great question.
Who was your best opponent or rival throughout your career?
God, I'm going to say a couple. Rock and Roll Express for sure in the 90s. We wrestled them 50 times, Big and Beautiful. I mean, all the time we wrestled them. It was so much fun. KR Superstar definitely has to be in there. Gordon Braswell has to be in there. And Stro. Stro gets honorable mention because we had a good little run with him. And it, just the Dorothy thing was so, you know, it was engaged by a lot of people, and I was all in on that.
Yeah, I dig it. John, take us home.
All right. Listen, Humphrey DuPont IV, this has been a legendary podcast. We're so glad to have you here and wanted to thank you very much from Pro Wrestling Illustrated, No, I'm sorry. Not pro wrestling. Pro wrestling interviews.
Pro wrestling
interviews. Oh, God. You know what? I got to say.
I messed them up.
I got to say this. Tomorrow night on ScaryCast, Brady Hicks of PWI, another PWI, is going to be our guest talking about his ghost photography. And that's going to be just a blast. So it's going to be a lot
wow.
of fun. We had a lot of fun with you. We're going to have you back. And, look, thanks a lot for being here with us. This is Dr. John Stamey saying good night, everybody. Same bat time. Same bat channel next week, 9 p.m. Eastern on I'm sorry, 7:30 p.m. Eastern on Pro Wrestling Interviews. Thanks a lot to everybody. We'll see everyone next week, so you better watch out. You better not cry. And you better not pout, because if you do, Humphrey DuPont IV is going to come get you. Am I correct, Humphrey?
I'm going to smack him with a Christmas briefcase. Yes, sir.
All right.